morning, everyone, and happy Thursday. And this is I Take Bravo Very Seriously with me, your host, Dana. Thanks so much for being here today. I'm happy to be here, too, except that I'm having a little bit of an issue with my dog. She has accidentally ingested some weed or cannabis materials. I live in a very dirty part of a city, and it is just covered in cigarette butts and broken glass and drugs and everything, and my poor little angel is now under the influence. So I am trying to record, but also keeping an eye on her because I just want to monitor her and make sure she's okay. But aside from that, you guys, how much news is there this week in the Bravosphere? Like, it's wild what is going on. Plus, I have so many different things to recap for you guys. So let's just get into it because there's just so much to get to today.
Your man made out with my friend.
Okay, so first up, Candace Dillard Bassett is pregnant. So that's amazing. Congratulations to Candace and her husband, Chris Bassett. We had also, as you guys will recall, heard recently on this podcast and elsewhere that Candace is leaving the Real Housewives of Potomac. And she definitely noted when she came out with her pregnancy that one of the main reasons for her leaving the show was her pregnancy. Robin Dixon has confirmed that she's been fired from the Real Housewives of Potomac, which is crazy. I don't know if they necessarily can be fired. I think your contracts just don't get renewed. But at the same time, like Andy on Radio Andy said, like, that he really commends Robin for just being honest and coming out with him being like, yeah, I was fired. And if she was fired, I guess that's because she was keeping all that information behind the paywall. I mean, when she was on Watch What Happens Live about it and Andy was questioning her about it, he was pissed. So I guess she could have been fired. NECA might also have been fired, but that hasn't been directly confirmed. That was on the Jasmine brand, and the Jasmine brand was where Robin Dixon's firing was originally posted. So, you know, I didn't know if it was a legitimate source, but given that they were right about that, they might be right about NECA as well. Alexia and Todd Napola from The Real Housewives of Miami, who, as you may recall, have only been married for a couple of years, are divorcing. So he filed, and then she posted that she was shocked and is hoping to turn to friends and family during this time. Then, I think, like, later that day, Crystal Kung Minkoff announced that she was not returning to The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills for the 14th season. You know, okay. Then we have Jen Padranti from The Real Housewives of OC. So you remember Jen and Ryan, like, that weird guy Ryan. This was her first season, last season of Real Housewives of OC. And I think while the cameras were rolling, he proposed to her. So they got engaged. So I guess they defied all odds. If you were keeping track of what was going on at Coachella this weekend, I mean, lots of sightings, lots of people, lots going on, but most notably, Teresa Giudice and Taylor Swift took a picture together at Coachella, and I wonder if either knew who the other were, but, you know, whatever. In other news, James Kennedy has blocked me. It's news to me. I'm not even sure for how long at this point, because I just don't really care for his, like, DJ Beats stories. But yeah, I mean, you know, I've come for him, and I haven't in a while, so I'm not really sure when this was, but I am okay with it. Cruz, which is Jax and Brittany, their three-year-old son, he had his birthday last weekend, and all of, you know, the friends and family were there from the Valley, Vanderpump Rules, you know, it's a who's who of West Hollywood. And so everyone was videoing Jax and Brittany singing happy birthday to Cruz, and as they're doing so, the table collapses and this three-story cake just completely falls, and it is just so Jax and Brittany. Like, it was just such a funny moment. We got news that Rebecca Minkoff will be joining the Real Housewives of New York, and people are really, really excited about that. She's a fashion designer. Other than that, I have no idea who she is. So if I'm an asshole and an idiot, please school me. Please. I appreciate it. Tom Schwartz is on the Vile Files this week, live from Coachella. He gave us a little bit of tea. He was talking about his current girlfriend, who he said he met at TomTom last summer. Her name is Sophia. She was also there with him. And they didn't really talk for a few months. And then, you know, they started hanging out. And he said that they do love each other. And Nick sort of made them say, I love you. And Sophia said that she and him are sort of at almost at girlfriend-boyfriend status. She just wants to feel at peace or at ease or something like that. And one really cute thing that he said about her was that she accepts all of his flaws and all of his baggage. And I just thought that was really sweet because he does have a lot of it. In terms of, like, Vanderpump Tea, he said that there's actually something that had happened between him and Joe that he didn't end up discussing with her, but it was something that made him pull away from her. So I'm like so curious what that is. And basically he said that like because, you know, he just felt like it would be a confrontation and he felt like he didn't want to do that. So he just pulled away and that wasn't, and if there's anything he did wrong in the situation, he feels it was that. Nick Vial was very pro Tom. Apparently they had a great time together last weekend at Coachella, but to the point where Nick is just now apparently a Schwartz apologist. And okay, like, yes, obviously Joe, you know, was looking into things too much with Schwartz and fell in love with him and knew that he didn't want a girlfriend, but he definitely did things wrong and he definitely led her on. Like, he told her he loved her. Like, you don't do that. You do not tell a woman that you are not interested in dating, that you love them, especially one that you know has feelings for you. Like, come on. But Nick was like, no, no, no. Oh, that may have just been something you said in passing. And then she has the nerve to, like, you know, say that you're the jerk and you're the one that did this to her when it should have been so obvious to her. And it's like, saying I love you in passing? And, like, he didn't even, like, get Schwartz to actually confirm that, right? So I feel like that's really terrible. And Nick is sort of becoming a little bit of a misogynist lately, but I don't know, I digress. Then he did confirm that Joe knew about Scandoval, but said that she was so oblivious and wasn't really aware. And then Nick is like, okay, but she said that she thought that Tom and Ariana were broken up. And Schwartz is like, well, yeah, so did Sandoval. And then Nick and Natalie are like, oh, we don't want to go there. We don't want to go there. But again, this doesn't make sense because when, you know, Sandoval thought him and Ariana were broken up was February 14th. That's when he said he broke up with her. Schwartz, Joe, Sandoval, and Raquel went to Big Bear mid-January. So why would Joe think in mid-January that Schwartz and that Sandoval and Ariana were broken up, especially when she was at their house like 6 weeks prior for Thanksgiving? Like, whose house did you think you were in? Like, what are you talking about? It's just, I don't know. I don't buy that one. I buy that whatever she knew, it was never with malicious intent. Maybe she didn't feel close enough with anyone involved to say anything. That's fine. But just admit it, take the accountability and move on. But then again, at the end of the day, if you did know what you did, Ariana's never going to be friends with you. It just is what it is. And I've said what I've said. Like, you know, I just, and I'll get back to this later when we get to Rachel Goes Rogue, but, you know, I just really don't think that, you know, she can expect a friendship with Ariana or Katie. But anyways, and then we have Disrespectfully with Katie and Dana. And basically they just respond to Rachel Goes Rogue, where she said that she sent Katie and Dana a text apologizing about the whole we're stressless thing. And they basically were just, I mean, basically they went into a whole thing, but they were basically just like, we don't care and like, stop talking to us. Now let's get into Summer House.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, so we're back at the white party and we're back in the middle of a fight between Kyle and Amanda, where Amanda says that she wants to move to the suburbs of New Jersey and she wants to start thinking about having a family. And Kyle says that he's thinking about his sanity. He says he's concerned about being disconnected and that he will feel disconnected being outside of the city. Lindsay says that as a man, you sort of have to just get over it. And once you have kids, your priorities change. And then if you just sort of look over at Carl, he's just sort of like analyzing the situation and just sort of watching it for what it is, because I guess he's sort of trying to analyze to see if whether what she's saying affects their relationships and their lives. Their relationship and their lives. Kyle says he doesn't know what he wants out of this. And Lindsay's like, are you saying you don't want kids? And Kyle says that for him to feel content, he needs to feel like they're in a better place. Otherwise, he will feel very lonely. And Amanda tells the camera that she and Kyle have always been in agreement that they wanted to have a family in the suburbs. So for him, like, changing the script, this like really pisses her off. And Carl tells the camera that, you know, with regards to Kyle, if the decision was solely his, Kyle would have been a groomsman, which I knew it, right? Like, I feel like this took us an episode and an after show and now a new episode to get this out of him. Like, obviously, Kyle tells Lindsay he's afraid if he's off in suburbia, he'll have no one to talk to. I don't know. This whole thing, I just find really upsetting because, you know, he's clearly drunk and he's doing this in front of everyone. And you have like Amanda Page and Sierra saying this in bed later that day. She basically, like, Page just tears down the fourth wall and she's like, do you ever say to Kyle, like, dude, you just said that on national television. Like, what's your problem? And Amanda's like, you know, I'm going to be with the kids primarily. He'll be working. And Paige is like, yeah, you would make a better mom than anyone. And then she goes, Sierra, that's no slight to you. That is only a compliment to her. Just so sweet. I don't know. Like, the fact that he just sort of airs out their dirty laundry like this, but not even just their dirty laundry, it's just like he says these very, very sharp, jab, hurtful things, as if she's almost like Cruella de Vil, to say that he feels so lonely and awful in his relationship with her. And I'm not saying his feelings aren't valid, but we'll get back to that later. So the next day, the gang go to the beach, and Amanda and Kyle go off to talk. And Amanda's like basically saying, like, here's my issue. Like, you go out till 4 a.m. and then you get an attitude, and then, you know, you call me out in front of all these other people because you're upset, because, like, I'm upset about something legitimate. And Kyle says that, like, what he means to say is that, you know, he wants to, like, really improve their communication. That's what he's fixated on. And Amanda's like, I feel like you're just, like, saying things to say things. And Kyle's like, okay, because I stay out late once a month, this is not a reason to hate me. And Amanda's like, there's always somewhere to go. There's always someone else to hang out with. There's always, like, a person's apartment to go to. And Kyle's like, well, I'm a very social person, and it's very lonely being married to you because you don't talk to me. And then she's like, okay. And it's just like, it's a very, again, like, just a very, very pointed and rude thing to say, and trying to be very, very hurtful. And then he's like, why aren't you being nice to me? And he does do that. He'll say something very pointed and hurtful to her, and then be like, what's wrong? It's just like, what do you mean, what's wrong? You just said this most horrible thing. But, like, okay, again, we'll get back to it later, because they're gonna have a therapy scene, and then we'll digress. Or, sorry, we will dissect more so. So then they all go out later, and Kyle is, like, completely drunk, and he tells Paige that it hurt his feelings that Amanda did not have any pictures of him on her phone. And then Paige reminds him that Amanda loves him, and, well, he drunk cries. Back at home, Andrea, Lindsay, and Amanda are playing Truth or Dare, and the question is, how do you rate your current sex life? And Lindsay says 2.5. And then she goes, well, we had sex today, but nobody finished. And then Lindsay tells the camera that if someone isn't ambitious and doesn't have drive, it doesn't get her juices flowing. Lindsay ends up telling them, so basically Andrea and Amanda, that she told Carl that they should have sex more so he doesn't feel the pressure to finish every time. And I literally can't believe she's saying this to people who aren't even her friends, like, let alone on national TV. Like, this is such a episode of, is this too much for a national TV? Because I feel like in both of these situations it was. So then Jesse and Kyle come home at, like, 3 a.m. The funny thing about what Kyle is doing at 3 a.m. is, like, so they show him, and he's literally just eating and dancing by himself in the kitchen while Jesse is outside in a hot tub with some random girl that he brought home. And then Kyle comes into the bedroom at 3:55 a.m., and Amanda tells him to F off. And, like, it's always so confusing because he doesn't seem to get it, right? Again, I will come back to it when we get to the therapy scene. So back in New York, we have this, like, really cute scene of West hanging out with his great aunt. And she's saying that he's matured in a lot of ways. And he talks about Sierra, and he talks about liking her. And the producer's like, you know, when was the last time you were in a relationship? And he's like, like, what defines a relationship? And then he's basically like, not since he was like 20. And he doesn't like to jump into relationships, and he really likes to take things slow. But isn't he like 27 or 28? Like, you don't want to jump into relationships, but you've been single for like almost a decade. So I don't know. This just sounds like another guy that Sierra, like, I didn't initially, I thought he was a really good guy, but now it's starting to seem like this is just like every other guy that Sierra's ever dated, right? And that's like the last thing she needs right now. So then we have the therapy scene. So we have Amanda and Kyle have a therapist come over. Kyle explains that when they fight, he will bring up things that she's not doing. So he fully admits that. And then she says that he makes her feel like she isn't good enough. Amanda says she's always questioning herself, and to sort of, you know, not get that validation from your partner is really, really hard. Kyle says that when Amanda's unpleasant, he feels like she doesn't like him. And that's something we've heard him say a few times. It sort of even reminds me of like the Sandoval Ariana situation of like, you know, I feel like you're annoyed by me. I feel like you don't even like me. And that's definitely how Kyle feels in his relationship with Amanda. And that is valid. He says he feels like he's tried to work on some of the bigger flaws, but it's like all the work he's put in is straight out the door when he goes out late. And Amanda's, it's more like it makes her upset. Like, he knows it makes her upset, but yet he chooses to do it anyways. So that's so true, right? Because I thought it was really interesting to hear that he only does this like a few times a year, right? When he says like, I only go out like 5 times a year. Like, why is it such a big deal? So I thought that was sort of interesting given that, you know, she sort of does make it seem like it's this constant everyday sort of thing. But she's saying like, you know, the fact that like, I tell you one day it makes me upset, and then literally the next day you do it again. It's more about and it would be for me as well. It's more about the principle of, like, I've asked you not to do something because it upsets me, and then you deliberately do it. Like, do you not love me? Like, that's how I would feel. So then Kyle talks about how he had an unfaithful moment way back. Amanda says there's no reason to, you know, be out with people that you just met until 4 a.m. And, you know, he comes at her instead of just being sorry. And Amanda tells the camera that had he had not cheated on her so long ago, it's not that, right? Like, it's that she's dealing with the PTSD from it. And it's just easier to say to people that, like, oh, he cheated on me. And, like, that's what I'm upset about. But it's really so much more than that. And it's all the stuff that she's been dealing with since then. And that just sounds so incredibly painful and difficult. So what we have here is, you know, a guy who feels lonely in his relationship, but he's a very social person. You have a girl who doesn't want to be social, and also wants to be more subdued in her relationship. And she has explained this a couple times, and we'll go through this in the after show as well, where she has explained that, you know, there was many years where she was with Kyle where he was so busy with work and she was begging him to spend time with her and he wouldn't, and eventually she just sort of got used to that, and so she got used to their relationship the way it was. And now he has different needs, and I sort of don't know. I'm no therapist. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you do then, right? Like, it's one thing if you're on the same page at the same time and that's when you get married and that's all great. But if your love languages change, if your needs in your relationships change, but the person doesn't change with it, what do you do? But it's also reasonable, like, for Amanda to be like, I've been like this in this relationship for this whole time. You know what I mean? But it's also reasonable for Kyle to feel lonely in his relationship, right? So it's just wild that they have even got here, especially because we've been focused so hard on Carl and Lindsay, right? So taking us there, we go to the bridal store for Lindsay. She tries on the most beautiful dress. She looks absolutely stunning. Danielle is crying and she's saying she's so happy to even be there. And to be honest, I completely forgot that Danielle was even on this show because she has been so quiet and really keeping herself out of the drama with Carl and Lindsay, which, good for her. I mean, she did everything right this season except for, like, get, like, screen time and stuff. But yeah, it's good to see them back in a good place. And Lindsay tells the camera that she almost, like, gave up on her fairy tale ending. She said that she had imposter syndrome and she never thought that she would be so blessed to actually fall in love with her best friend. And I just love the ominous music they play for the foreshadowing of us knowing what is to come. So, you know, there's a Summer House after show now, right? So let's get into that. So everybody talks about their icks. I'm not going to get into all of them, but Paige says that when men use umbrellas, that is an ick because umbrellas are for girls. I literally died. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. Lindsay said that the frequency and the quality of the sex with Carl was an issue. And Carl says that the sex was tough because, like, when they had conflict, you know, it wasn't really something that they wanted to do, but he also said that he didn't recall sex being at the top of her list in therapy. Lindsay said that Carl would actually reject her. Carl said that there were lots of times he wanted to have sex and she didn't, and it is what it is, and he didn't complain about it. And Kyle says that if your relationship isn't in a good place, you aren't having a good sex. Which is totally true, but it's, again, like, just so wild that she rated him a 2.5 on national TV and said that he didn't finish and, like, said that he was, like, embarrassed about it. Like, that is so humiliating on top of, like, the additional things she has already done about, like, accusing him of being on drugs. So it's just, God, I just wonder how he feels, like, every week just watching this stuff back. Crazy. Kyle says that it's noticeable to him that Amanda doesn't have pictures of him, and it makes him feel small, and it makes him feel like he isn't important to her. Amanda said that her phone is full of pictures of her dogs, but she's not one of those people that, like, pulls out her phone when she goes out. It's more so people taking pictures of her and things like that. Paige says, who cares, and she actually couldn't take Kyle seriously when he told her this. Amanda said that he's gone to therapy that he has to go to therapy and talk to someone because what he's saying isn't accurate and people think that what he says is gold, and she wishes he wouldn't do this on national TV. So if he says she's lazy, then people think she's lazy. And that's true. Like, where would we be getting this information from, right? Like, we don't live with them. We see them in these very small amounts. We don't know. And yeah, if I think about Amanda, I think about her being lazy, and that is because Kyle has drilled that into my brain by saying it so many times. Can you imagine your husband saying that about you? Like, the things that he says about her, like, that he makes her, again, his feelings are valid, but, like, so hurtful to basically talk about your wife like she's awful on national TV. Carl says that Lindsay never took pictures of them, and he actually took pride in doing that for them. Paige says that Kyle is not a dog. Amanda said that she would complain for years, as I said, about not spending enough time together with Kyle, and eventually she gave up on that, and now suddenly he's lonely, which, again, he's entitled to. Kyle says that Amanda makes no effort to socialize, and Amanda says that socializing drains her. Amanda says that Kyle only goes out, like, 5 times a year, but of those times, he comes home at 4 a.m., so to her, it's, like, every time he goes out. So, that is the best explanation we have on this, but, again, like, now that I have more context, it's 5 times a year, girl. Like, who cares? Like, you really do make it sound like it's every night. And again, to each their own, and it's your relationship. And again, she has PTSD from, like, things that have happened in the past. But if this is a 5 times a year thing, like, who cares? But, you know, I feel like they have bigger issues. Kyle says that he does feel bad because he knows that it triggers her, but he doesn't think about it when he's out. And I think that's very obvious. He just does, he's always, like, sort of in his own world. And Jesse says that he has let everyone touch his fake nut. And that is it for Summer House.
And that's God, what you
why
go
is it
on.
About the damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta, read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the pasta.
Okay, so the day I released my last episode, so last Thursday, Rachel went rogue with Joe Winberg, so I wasn't able to cover that for you. So I actually have 2 Rachel Goes Rogue episodes to cover with you today. So the first one, as I mentioned, was with Joe Winberg, chapter 18. This was a long episode, so I'll just give you the highlights. So basically, Joe says that, like, in season 10, she wasn't on camera, and then the camera crew had actually caught her leaving Schwartz's one day when she was staying with him, and then it sort of became, like, this Who's Joe situation, and she and Schwartz wanted to initially keep their situation under wraps, and then she wanted to tell her story and control the narrative, and I just, every time I hear, like, narrative platform, which is, both of these words are heard a lot throughout this episode, it's just very Bethany Frankel speak. But anyways, so then she talks about Hotel Ziggy. Rachel is talking about how Sheena is taking off Joe's hat and how that is, like, this major boundary violation. And it's like, okay, like, it wasn't cool that Sheena did that, but I don't know if that's a boundary violation. Like, it's a little bit much. Joe said that she didn't know why she was being mocked. Rachel theorized that she's not the cookie cutter influencer type, which is very, very true. Joe is not. She said that being quiet didn't work, so she decided to tell her story on camera. She said that Katie has such a huge platform, so when she says things like calling Joe a crackhead, like, it really has an impact. And Rachel says that's offensive to people with ADHD. LOL. Then Joe says she doesn't even do any substances, and to say that on national TV is so damaging because people were questioning her mental health, which is personal. Then she gets into Kristen and how Kristen had spoken about her on her podcast. Rachel said that Kristen painted Joe as unhinged. Joe said that it's frustrating to have someone diagnose her who hasn't even talked to her in 3+ years. She said that she can't believe that Kristen basically diagnosed Joe's mental health on her podcast. And then Kristen actually ended up, so I ended up posting a clip of that, of Joe saying that on Rachel's podcast. So I posted that to my Instagram on the Bravo Investigator. And then Kristen actually responded to my post and she goes, so we actually haven't spoken in 1.5 years. I didn't talk shit about her mental health. I said she gets social anxiety at times, in brackets, which is true. And again, not a negative thing. And then later on, she commented, I wonder how many listens our podcast got from this at @Luke_Broderick. So one, hi, Kristen. Second of all, I mean, she's calling her out. I can't honestly remember exactly what Kristen's podcast said, but I don't think that she was trying to diagnose her. I think she had just mentioned a few incidences. And I think that she was trying to be, for the most part, respectful about it because she was friends with Joe for such a long time. But, you know, I guess Joe feels as though Kristen went, like, way below the belt. Then Joe says that the mean girl energy mostly came from Katie, and that was when she started dating Schwartz. Yes, she used the word dating. She said that Lala was very nice to her, and it was really nice to film with her. She said that she was only asked to do 2 scenes, and then it turned into the whole season. And she said that the social media stuff, the hate that she gets, it's every day. She said that Katie and Ariana were mean to her, and they don't even know her. She said, like, if you don't know me, you don't, like, know me enough to hate me. And then, like, again, like, I've brought this up before and I'll bring it up again now. They know enough about you not to like you, right? Any sort of bullying I'm not okay with. But when it comes to Katie and Ariana specifically, I mean, Joe, you, and it doesn't even matter what kind of relationship she had with Katie. She could have no relationship with Katie. But the person that sleeps with Schwartz after Katie, or the person that dates Schwartz after Katie, is someone Katie isn't gonna like. That is very normal. Like, am I talking to the girlfriend of my ex-boyfriend? No, like, that is not someone I'm ever going to want in my life. That is very, very normal. And whether she was oblivious and whether she did it with any malintent, probably not, but she knew about the affair. And that is something that is always going to hurt Ariana. And Ariana's not going to want to be your friend for that. So for those two reasons alone, for two things that have been verified as true, those two girls are not going to want to be your friends, and that is very reasonable. And, like, to an extent, I mean, I'll get into, I'm, like, going off on a tangent, not summarizing this, but, you know, I just feel like at the end of the day, like, you decided you wanted to go on camera. This is also a show that is about bullying, right? Like, this is about mean girls and bullying and cheating and all of this. And, I mean, it took Lala years to sort of get in the friend group, and it's not even, like, a guarantee. I understand that you wanted to control the narrative and tell your story. I understand that. Did you feel you got to? I don't know, right? And is it worth it? That's up to you. But not everyone is built for reality TV, and that is totally okay. I mean, you have to have really, really thick skin to be part of reality TV. So I would say that most people aren't built for it, which is, like I said, totally okay. But, you know, to just complain and complain and complain after the fact about being treated away on a show where, quite frankly, I mean, everyone else has been treated way worse than you. Kristen got slapped in the face. Lala got called a whore. You know, I mean, way worse things have happened than, like, someone taking off your hat and saying, "Rat girl," behind your back, not to your face. That's really all that happened to you. Anyways, then she said, okay, then Rachel reads off the names that Joe has been called by the cast. I don't know if you recall that she did, that Bethany did this when Rachel was on her podcast, like all the names that Rachel was called on the season 10 reunion. So it was sort of funny. And it was just the things like crackhead and stuff like that. Joe said it's messed up that she's 35 and going through this. But like I said, like, nobody forced you on the show though. She said that she and Schwartz don't talk anymore. She said the one thing missing for them was trust. She said that he made her so happy, but they're in different places. She said that no one's ever asked her how she was doing. She said she spent 5 to 6 days a week together with him for 1.5 years, and they would say, "I love you," and when the cameras came up, it was like she didn't even exist to him. And she said that, you know, she was the last to know that he had stopped loving her because of the way he was sort of acting. She says she's still grieving it, which is very obvious because she, as you can see, like, she's always posting about him still. She says again that, like, she would stay with him for, like, 6 days in a row, like, every week. She said that she never had a friendship with Katie except for that text that she had sent her after the divorce. She didn't move in with Schwartz till months later, and nothing had happened between them. Then they caught feelings later and never hooked up during that time. She said that they would hang out and kiss and say, like, he would say, like, "I could marry you," but then, like, tell the press that they aren't together, which, I mean, this all is very confusing, right? But again, we're getting, like, two such different stories from them within the same week. She said that the messed up part is that he would say he didn't want to have a girlfriend, but now he has one. Which is true. But it's also like a year later. At the reunion, or Joe said that at the reunion, the cast thought she was lying about her relationship with him, and then they were baffled to find out she was telling the truth. Katie actually ended up apologizing to her at the reunion. She said that Lala was calling Ariana and Katie and Sheena out at the reunion, and Rachel was apparently a massive topic of conversation. Joe said that hearing "Rat Girl" and "So Glad She's Uncomfortable" from Katie and Sheena was really hurtful to her, which are things that were said at Hotel Ziggy that night. She says that she hates it that they're using their platforms for negativity, which I don't really think that they are. Like, if anything, I don't really think, and I don't mean this in a bad way, like, I don't think they're even thinking about her, quite frankly. Joe showed up to Hotel Ziggy upset because of a family thing that she had found out about earlier, so that's why she was sort of acting erratic and left crying and stuff like that. But then hearing people talk about her, that's why she was plugging her ears, and that's why she walked away. She said that Schwartz told her that he would do the red or yellow wristband when they went to the singles event. So red or yellow meant, like, taken or, like, considering, and then green meant, like, fully single. But then when they went on camera, he went with the green, and that she actually couldn't believe it, so then she did as well. And then she says that she went to the bathroom, and that's when he made out with that girl, but it wasn't actually something that she saw. So it was when she was in the bathroom, when she came out, She actually left, and then months later is actually when she found out from production, when she was doing her confessionals and interviews, that he had made out with someone that night. She said that she was actually in his second bedroom that night because it's easier for her to, like, get to clients in that area in Burbank, and he came home, and she had asked if he had kissed anyone, and he said, like, no, nothing. But she was confusing in this part because she said that, you know, she was staying in a second bedroom, but it was normal for her to be there. She had, like, taken out the dolls, cleaned everything up, and it was, like, they were dating. She said the words, like, we were dating. But then why are you sleeping in the second bedroom? Because if you're dating, like, wouldn't you be sleeping in the same bed? I don't know. I just thought that was weird. And then she, yeah, so I'm just confused about that timeline. Because why would you be going to a singles event at all? Even if, like, okay, yeah, you're there to support Tom Sandoval. Like, she knew that they weren't, like, in an exclusive thing. So I still find this confusing. So, and then the Schwartz interview, which I've already recapped for you guys, was after the fact. And he confirmed in that he doesn't talk to Joe anymore and that she didn't tell him that he was going on this podcast because he didn't talk to her anymore. Then Rachel did another episode, chapter 19, and this episode is about mean comments that are said about her. She read off a few of them and was sort of, I guess, responding to them. She was saying that she feels that she has grown from therapy and that it wasn't a waste of money, which is what some people were saying. She said that she feels that she has grown. She hates how people have put her in this box as someone who did a bad thing, and that is always who she will be. She said she's now prioritizing female friendships when before she was seeking validation in men. She said her family is really proud of her and how far she's come. That one was actually sad. That was in response to someone saying her family must be so, like, disappointed in her and hate that they adopted her, like, just really, really terrible stuff. When it comes to Ariana, she actually said that choosing to take legal action wasn't something she chose lightly. She said that if she wants to seek legal action against Tom, she has to seek legal action against Ariana, which is what I always thought. And I actually asked her publicist this exact question, and she didn't really give me an answer on it, but now this makes a lot more sense. She says that she's been through a lot and she's holding people accountable. She says that she knows that she did something wrong, but she says what happened to her was illegal. She said that she is still speaking about VPR because she is being spoken about on the show. She said that having her podcast is how she feels empowered and it helps her reclaim her narrative, and thus it's helping with her mental health when people are questioning why she's doing this when she's supposed to be working on her mental health. Then she had a therapist on to sort of discuss why people feel they can be cruel online, and as you guys know from my other episodes, I do not recap the parts where she talks to a therapist. And that is it for Rachel Goes Rogue.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, let's get into Vanderpump Rules. So I actually enjoyed this episode probably more so than any of the other episodes so far this season. This is probably my favorite. We started off with shooting Sheena's Good as Gold music video, and I don't know why, but for some reason I thought that she already had a Good as Gold music video, and I don't know if it's because, like, we've seen her, like, perform it on TV and I have that as a recording, so I feel like it's a music video. But she's got Ariana and Lala there. She says that she loves having music as a creative outlet and she couldn't be happier, and you know what, girl? Good for you. You may not be good at it, but you work hard at it, so good for you. So basically this episode is a lot of people talking about Bethany's podcast. So as you guys probably recall, Rachel, I forget what she was at the time, I think Rachel, did a three-part episode on Bethany Frankel's podcast. I believe it was last August, so it was three separate days, and the internet was going wild over it. There was some really interesting things in there. There were some things in there that were complete crap. So it was definitely very interesting, and it's sort of crazy to sort of be able to watch the cast's reactions having this happen sort of on the show, right? That's sort of wild. So Ariana, in response to Rachel had saying on the podcast that she and Ariana were not close, Ariana said that she and Rachel were close and they spent a ton of time together. And then the producers do a flashback to Rachel's birthday last year and Tom giving Raquel glasses from him and Ariana. And I just sort of thought it was interesting that they didn't choose a scene or a clip, like, of just Ariana and Raquel hanging out, because, like, obviously those exist. So I just thought that was kind of funny, and I didn't really think that scene was very representative of, like, their close friendship necessarily. Ariana said that Rachel is either now saying they weren't as close to cover herself, or she's just basically saying she never cared about, you know, Ariana to begin with. Sheena said that Raquel is saying in the podcast that their friendship was mutually beneficial and that she had paid rent. And then Sheena goes into this whole thing with Ariana and Lala about how Raquel was only giving her $1,000 but wasn't paying, like, all the other bills. And she, like, sort of totals all of that. And she's like, and she had sex in my bed, which she has said before, right? And she really wants to double down that that really upset her. And then we go over to Allie and James's, and Allie is telling James that Rachel's blaming him for his behavior and how ridiculous that is and how she's taking no accountability. And, you know, when it comes to that, I, you know, now that we know more information, at the time, what she was saying to Bethany was, you know, Graham would get upset or would hide when James would yell, and that he would encourage Graham to bite him because he liked the sensation, which is something everybody just fully ignored. Like, what do you mean you like the sensation of dog bites? That's a very weird thing. But anyways, everybody just ignored that. And the reason she had brought that all up is because she was explaining why she had called Lisa very upset about James having Graham. And I think her other reason was, like, he didn't have a lot of dog experience. But now we know that the reason that they broke up, because this was in her legal filing, that the reason they broke up is because he kicked her family dog 4 times. I'm not sure if Allie knows that, but now that we know this information, that makes a lot more sense as to why she was so horrified that Lisa had given Graham, now a hippie, to James. Again, I don't know if Allie knows that. At the time, Rachel had only told a few close friends, and who knows if James told her, like, the real reason for the breakup. I'm guessing not, especially given Allie's sort of reaction to this, that that would be sort of the most ludicrous thing. In the podcast, Raquel said that she never loved Tom, and Allie says, oh, well, that's different from what she said last year. But yeah, that's literally what growth is and what going to therapy is, right? So she went to the treatment center, she found out that what she felt for Tom when she said last year that she loved him, she found out that that actually wasn't love, it was manipulation, it was lies, it was all these other things, and then she realized she didn't love him. So yes, it is different, because once she learned some information, she grew from that. Then we have a scene of Sandoval going over to Schwartz's, and he is super emotional about the podcast, about Rachel saying that she didn't love him, and he's going on and on about all these changes that he's made to himself. And, like, he can't believe that she won't even give it a shot. But, like, again, Tom, like, she never asked you to stop drinking and to journal. Like, she doesn't care about that. She cared about the fact that you made her lie, you manipulated her, and I'll say it again for the people in the back, you recorded her without her consent. So, like, and then he's like, what, like, what was it all for? And it's like, LOL, what was your affair all for, Tom? Like, Schwartz says to Sandoval, like, it's over, and Rachel probably just wants her voice heard before she goes off and starts her new life, which is what we thought was going to happen. Like, we thought, or I thought, she was going to move to Arizona and marry a townie and just live, like, a regular life, right? But that is not what happened. Then Tom, the restaurant, is preparing for its first brunch. Schwartz is there, and so is Lisa and Logan. And Logan, as you may recall, is Ariana's best friend. I thought he was going to have a job at Something About Her, but I guess with it not being open, he's not doing that. But he's there at TomTom as the manager of TomTom. And I just thought that was sort of interesting given the dynamic. Like, he's best friends with Ariana, yet he's sort of working for Tom Sandoval. But maybe it's not a big deal because, like, Tom's like a 5% partner. So maybe, you know, a job is a job and Ariana doesn't really care. But I just thought that was sort of interesting. And you never really saw their interaction throughout the scene. But it's just interesting that literally, like, Ariana's best friend works for Tom, in a sense. So Schwartz tells Lisa and Logan that he's worried about Sandoval after listening to the podcast. Lisa says as long as Rachel's safe and healthy, who cares? And I wholeheartedly agree. And it's all that really matters. And it's sort of the first and only time that Lisa has actually sort of acknowledged Rachel's well-being, because she has consistently acknowledged and worried about Tom's well-being. But this is something actually Rachel wanted, right? She wanted to know that Lisa cared about her health and well-being. So then Sandoval comes in and he's talking about being upset about the podcast, and then they start talking about the house, and he tells Schwartz that Ariana took so long to come back with an offer, or her lawyer took so long, he said it took 2 months and it was so long that he's not sure if he can afford the house now. So let me get this straight. So in 2 months, his financial situation changed so drastically that he could no longer buy her out. And, like, he didn't realize he would need to pay the current interest rate. But, you know, of course, that's all Ariana's fault, right? Like, it's just so crazy. Like, let's say, imagine, whatever day that was. Let's say it was March 1st. Obviously, it wasn't. Other things happened that day. But let's say it was March 1st. He slaps down an offer to buy the house. And she buys, and, you know, she signs it that day. And shake hands. It all happens that day, which would never happen. 8 weeks later, you would no longer be able to make those payments and afford the house. So then Ariana has done you a favor, because, dude, if you are in a situation where at one point, you feel you can afford a $3.1 million home, because isn't that what he offered her? And then 2 months later, you felt you could no longer afford that? You should not be buying a house. Okay? I'll just say that. So then Sheena writes a new song called Apples, which is a revenge song to Raquel and Tom. And I have to be honest with you, it is a bop. I bought it on iTunes. I listen to it constantly. It is a really, really fun song. So then we have a scene of Tom at his band practice, and James shows up to talk to him because Tom had made an offer to him to open up for him at the El Rey. And Sandoval is legitimately wearing a t-shirt that says Dipped Out, which is so... Ugh, for somebody who's like, oh, why can't people keep talking about my affair? Why can't people stop talking about my affair? You're literally wearing a shirt about the affair, my friend. I don't know why I said my friend. He is not my friend. So James says, like, you know, he can't help but feel a little bit bad for Tom because he was sort of in the same position when Rachel did Sheena's podcast after they broke up. And Tom is just so upset, and he's venting, and he's like, he realized now that he cared more for Rachel than she did for him, and everything she's saying is crap. And he's saying, like, she used me, and now she's, like, throwing me away, and I didn't get any closure. And James is like, F closure. And he's like, she was selfish when she got with me, and she told me, oh, by the way, she told me that, like, when she asked you to stop drinking, it was half because she expected that you couldn't. And James almost sort of, like, retorts with, like, yeah, well, she said on the podcast that she never loved you, so, you know, maybe don't take it so seriously, buddy. And so they're obviously having a sort of, like, a bit of a pissing contest, but you could tell that James has just sort of always wanted to say this, so he just does, and he's just like, you know, I don't think you guys were ever in love, I think it was just for sex, because you weren't getting it from Ariana. And Sandoval's like, no, dude, we would talk for hours, and the sex was just, like, a small part of those hours. And it's like, okay. And James is like, it's crazy how you're rewriting history, man. For years, you were like, Ariana's my true love. So now you're trying to act like it's all different. And James is like, I'm not opening for you. I'm on to bigger and better things because this is a joke and bye. And Sandoval, of course, always having to have last word, is like, go push buttons on your laptop. Bye. God. So then we have Lala having a sperm selection party, and she's holding this at Lisa's house. So she has the cryobank there, and they're basically playing these games and picking her donor at this event. So Katie and Allie go aside to talk, and Allie said that Lala said that Katie was miserable, so she wanted to check on her. And Katie's like, since when did Lala start talking about me behind my back instead of to my face? So then Lala makes a speech at her party saying, like, this isn't how she pictured her life, but she's so glad it's an option, and she's very emotional. And as horrible as she's been lately, like, I am so happy for her that she found a way to have what she always wanted. So basically they play this, like, pin the sperm on the vagina game. And, like, Ariana's there, and she's being so supportive, but, you know, whatever, Lala. So they all vote on donors, and Lala picks one, and that's so great and exciting. Then we have a scene of Tom and Tom at Sandoval and Ariana's house. Sandoval says that he would consider keeping the house if he had a roommate, and he's pointing to Schwartz, basically. And Schwartz is like, oh my god, the optics of that would be horrible. But then he's like, just... argument's sake, like, what would you charge me? And Sandoval's like, $6,000. And Schwartz is like, I could not reasonably put $6,000 into a place that I am not getting a return on. And Sandoval's like, well, we could get a loan together. And, like, I am so glad this didn't happen, because you could so see Sandoval just steamrolling Schwartz into this. Oh my god, these two men buying a house together, that would be hilarious. So then we have a scene of Allie and James at home, and Allie says that Lisa asked her about the sperm party and when she is going to have babies. And she said that she's not ready, but she never has really felt, like, the need for a baby and doesn't really dream about marriage, doesn't have a Pinterest board about it and that kind of thing. And then James starts to cry, as per usual, like he always does, and says that, you know, this is what he really wants for himself and that he didn't want to, like, waste his time like he did with Rachel after dating her for, like, 5 years. And he says that him and Allie have been together for a year and a half. And then she assures him that, like, she wouldn't be with him if she didn't see a future with him. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm just noticing this for the first time. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm sort of feeling this dynamic is sort of, like, giving me Craig and Paige vibes, because it's sort of like the woman in the situation or in the relationship is the more authoritative one, the one who doesn't seem as into the man, and the man is the one who's more seeming needy and more seeming to want that conventional family life, while the woman is more like, I'm not ready yet. I've got stuff to do. I've got, you know, even Ariana's the same way, right? It's not all about this conventional, like, you know, even James says in this scene, I just thought things were going to go a particular way. You get married, you have kids, that's the way things go. But it doesn't have to be. And that's why people like Ariana and people like Allie are like, well, you know, I just want to see what else is out there for me. I want to do other things. But for me, it's just sort of wild that you haven't had this conversation yet, because you've been together a year and a half. So, like, yeah, you said, you don't want to waste time. But then you two moved in together at 6 months. You've been living together for a year. and you have not ever talked about, I'm not even saying with each other, because obviously you don't want to scare someone off early on, but just to have the conversation about whether those are things that you two both want, those are very just basic sort of things. And if you're not aligned with them, yeah, you don't want to waste each other's time, but don't waste it. Do it a year and a half earlier. But anyways, I digress. So then we have a scene where everyone shows up for the Tom Tom brunch, including Ariana. Sandoval shows up in another women's suit, which is becoming his thing. James just apologizes to Sandoval and goes off to DJ, and that is just so reminiscent of how, I guess, conflicts should go on these shows, where it's just like, we're gonna have this big blow up and it's like, shake hands, all done, so that we can get on with the next episode, I guess, or the next scene. So the ladies are all sitting together and they're eating, and Katie confronts Lala about what Alia told her, and basically they argue about whether the word miserable was used or not. And they get to the point, and Lala tells Katie that she feels like Katie has been unhappy lately, and Katie's like, that's not true. And Katie says that she feels like Lala's softness is going towards people who aren't deserving, and she feels like Lala is more defensive with her lately. And Lala basically says that she knows that people grow and change, and how Katie and Ariana are so close now, and she gets that because she has a kid, but she just sort of doesn't know where her place is now. And Ariana grabs Lala's hand in this most, like, loving and supportive way, but again, no one on the cast is there for you, are they, Lala? And Katie just makes a face like she's so confused, because she's like, I have nothing to do, I have no baby, I have no boyfriend, I have no whatever, like, I have all this time for you, like, I don't want you to feel like I don't have time for you, we just need to spend time together. And she says that she calls Lala and she texts her, and you can see how emotional both of these women are and how much they really love each other. And it doesn't really seem like we get an answer here on this about whether Katie is in fact reaching out to Lala, who, I don't know if she isn't really responding, but Katie tells the camera that she would like to have Lala in her life as a close friend always, but it is a two-way street. And this is just, you know, so reminiscent of what's going on now. Lala tells Katie that she loves her for exactly who she is, which is so funny given recent events, because she seems to hate exactly who Katie is lately, and actually did in fact use the word miserable when speaking about her in that AMA that I asked Terry about. So then James plays Sheena's song at the event, which again is a bop. Sheena goes over to the Toms to ask them if they're aware of the song and to talk to them about the podcast. Sandoval says that he feels like hurt and betrayed, and she wants to make sure that, like, he knows that there's, like, one line that he might be a little upset about, but she sort of plays it like it's a joke, so she's, like, sort of hoping he's not upset, and it's the line that's, like, from a Ferrari to a Jetta, thought that you knew better, which she says could be open to interpretation. But Schwartz says that, I mean, not really, because Raquel literally had a Jetta, which I didn't even know. But Sheena's, like, trying to be cute about it. She's like, oh, you're gonna love it. And he's like, you'd feel differently if you've been through what I've been through. And it's like, what have you been through, Tom? So anyways, he gets pissed off and he storms off. And Sandoval says, like, he feels like he's come a long way with Sheena and that they've, like, made strides, but then she'll do things like this where she keeps profiting off of his pain. And he said that if she really cared about mending things with him, she wouldn't have done this. But I don't know, like, for her, she said it was also something that, like, she felt it was therapeutic for her, right? And that's the end of the Vanderpump Rules episode.
He's a f***ing battered wife! Look at him!
Okay, let's get into the VPR after show. So James doubles down that what happened between Tom and Raquel wasn't true love. They talk about Rachel saying that she never loved Tom on the podcast. Brittany says, then what did she do this all for then if it was for nothing? Like, if they were in love and something had come from it, then it would have been a different situation. But again, like, in listening to Rachel's podcast, like, once she had done the therapy and done the work and realized, like, he was the worst and most terrible thing for her, she could not give him that chance, right? So I don't think everyone is aware of the full situation. Lala said that he made Rachel buy into a reality that wasn't real and understands that, and that she fell in love with the idea. James said, like, it's sick that you would sleep with Rachel downstairs and then go up to Ariana and kiss her goodnight and do that for months. You can tell that James is still really, really angry. Tom said that he actually hasn't talked to her, being Rachel, and he wishes that they could have given a shot, but good riddance. So you can tell he's still very mad now. James says that podcasts should be unallowed. That is the wording he used. Everyone felt like there was definitely things said in the podcast that wasn't true. Sheena said that she felt like Rachel mooched off of her with her apartment. Brittany said that she knew that Ariana and Rachel were super close. Ariana said that her and Rachel's Instagrams were full of proof that they were close. Lala said that she would have never reached out to Rachel had she had known what she would have said on the podcast. She said that or Ariana said that there was no world where they were not close. Katie said that Bethany doesn't understand the history and dynamics of this group in the show. Well, she didn't name Bethany, but, you know, she said the podcaster. And Ariana's like, hasn't anyone learned from Howie Mandel? But, like, exactly, right? There was, and even Nick Vile still, right? Like, he's trying to do a watch back, and I think they're on, like, season 3, but he had a lot to say during Scandoval, and he became huge during Scandoval for a show he did not know the history of. Tom says that if Rachel really wanted to move on, she would stop talking about him every week. But then he says, never mind, a girl's gotta eat. And Schwartz is like, yeah, yeah, she's gotta get her bag. So it's really interesting how, and he, and, you know, he said this in the episode when it comes to Sheena, it sort of seems like he has this, like, you know, how dare you do this to me? How dare you say these things about me? Oh, but wait a minute, if you're making money off of it, then it's okay. Then you can totally trash me, then you can do whatever, because, you know, we're all willing to do whatever it takes in this town to make money, right? That's just sort of the mentality it sort of seems like, because at first you're so appalled by it, and you're so upset by it, and you can't stand it, but then when you realize, like, it's money-driven, you're like, yeah, okay. Which basically just means he would do the same. Then we have Kristen, and she's talking about having a baby and how she and Luke have great communication. She said that there was a lot of judgment on that from Jax. Jax said that, actually, 2 weeks prior to breaking up with Alex, that Kristen was trying to get pregnant with him, and then she started dating Luke 2 weeks later, and they started to get, trying to get pregnant right away. We're gonna have to find out more on the timeline on that, because I don't know if that's correct. He said he was concerned because she had no job and a boyfriend who didn't live in the same place. I mean, fair enough. I mean, if those things were true at the time, I mean, fair enough. Kristen said that Jax, if he spent more time focusing on his marriage with his wife and giving her the attention she deserves, they wouldn't be in the place that they're in. That is also very true, Kristen. Jax says that he feels like he would be the one being called over to help if Luke takes off because they aren't married. Okay. Again, Jax, I don't think you understand this concept. Even if Luke and her were married, that doesn't tie him to the house. He can still take off. And you wouldn't be the one that she calls, my friend. You would not be the one. Luke said that having a baby is a priority for them over getting married. Kristen learned that her circle needs to become a lot smaller for the life she's trying to live. Sheena said that she thought that Tom would see the humor in her song Apples. Tom said that she needs to stop doing things at his expense. Ariana said that she's annoyed that they are still dealing with the house stuff when she was saying from the beginning that the best option was to sell it and he's only just wasted her time. She said that he's only now just realizing what it actually takes to buy her out. Sandoval said that because she took so long, it's all her fault when at the time when he initially had reached out, his financial situation was better. But again, like 8 weeks earlier, how different could your financial situation have been? Lala talks about how it was fun to pick the sperm. Brittany says that looking back, the way that Lala did this through IUI is probably sexier than sleeping with Randall. And Lala says that she wants her child to know that she wanted her so badly that she would have done anything. And I think that's really beautiful. James thought that he would have had a kid by now, and he doesn't want to have kids with anyone but Allie. We have Michelle, Danny, and Nia talking about needing to be on the same page about when you want to have kids. James says that he won't be touring like this when he has a kid. He'll be a lot more hands-on. Katie says that she doesn't know what Lala, would call her miserable about, and that she hasn't been miserable in a year. Lala says that she vividly remembers not using the word miserable, and she said that Katie has actually told her outside of filming that she didn't see her life this way and wants a partner and didn't think it would be this hard. Okay, maybe she did, but that doesn't mean she's, like, generally miserable overall or generally unhappy overall. I am curious if we are going to hear more from Katie on this, because this is from the after show, not from the episode, so I don't even know if Katie would have even seen this prior to them filming the reunion, but I'm very curious to hear Katie's take on that. And that is it for the VPR after show.
This is why my show is successful. This is
actually not your show. It's actually my show.
Okay, let's get into the valley. So the girls are going to be staying at a house in Malibu, and they're all very excited. We have a scene of Jax and Brittany at home, and Jax is saying that he is the only one who always does all the cleaning up, and I completely doubt that. He says he's, like, really OCD about it. Jax says that he wants Brittany to go out and have fun with her friends, but then Brittany says, yeah, you say that, but then you get mad at me when I come home. He's like, I only get mad when you come home wasted and come in the room when I'm sleeping. Brittany says that Jax is moody and negative, and sometimes she feels she just needs to get away from that energy and do something fun. So we're definitely starting to see the cracks here. Brittany and Janet drive to the Malibu house together, and Brittany tells Janet that the guys can be such hypocrites sometimes, and how the other day she wasn't feeling well, and Jax told her to stop drinking and act like a mom. And they flash to this scene, and it is hard to watch. They're, you know, so this is definitely some of what Brittany's talking about when she talks about leaving Jax for the way that he talks to her. It's extremely rude, honestly. Brittany says that he goes out of his way, or that he actually goes out way more than she does. But when she does, it is like the worst thing in the world. Janet tells the camera that sometimes she gets concerned with how lit Brittany's getting, but she also remembers that she's married to Jax. So I'm going to keep that in my back pocket because I'm curious what Janet means and like how often Brittany really is drinking, because I don't know. It's weird to hear it from her friend. It's one thing to hear it from Jax, but it's another to hear it from her friend as well. So the ladies go to the house and they're doing like this painting, I guess, and they're supposed to do, they're supposed to be painting like what their intentions are. And Kristen says that her intentions for the day are peace, but she's hoping that everyone can be more empathetic, which is what she tries to lead with. And she says that it's really difficult to be an empath. And then the producers do this whole like montage from Vanderpump Rules where she's telling Diana to suck a D and she's saying that she's gonna knock James's ass out. And it's so funny. And basically all of the other girls, either to the camera or to themselves, are laughing. I am obsessed with this show. We get a lot of Nia this episode talking about her depression and how she's really struggling. We'll get back to that, but she talks to the women about it. It's really good that she feels that she can talk about this because it's wild. Again, this woman has just given birth to these twins 6 weeks prior, and she's not just struggling with this depression, but she's trying to figure out what it is or how to term it or how to treat it. She just doesn't really know what it is yet or what to call it. Then we have Michelle and Brittany going off to talk. And again, we're still at the Malibu house. And Michelle's saying that Jesse has patches of him trying, but she doesn't know if she wants this. She says that she's been feeling lonely in her marriage since Isabella was born, so basically for 3 years, and she's felt alone for so long that they've drifted apart. She doesn't know if they can get back to that place that they were at before they had Isabella. And Michelle said that maybe Isabella honestly would be better off because, you know, to have two parents that are like friends as opposed to two parents who like don't really like each other. Brittany's like, he needs to be your best friend. Then we have the guys at a pool, having their pool day. So this is at Jax's house. Jesse says that a year ago, Michelle told him that she was getting an apartment and that she was leaving, and he actually convinced her to stay. The guys start talking about cheating, and Jesse says, like, it's one thing he would never get over and he would never, like, be okay with. He would never even try to get over. And Luke tells the camera that he actually knows a secret about Jesse and Michelle's marriage when it comes to this. Now, the way he says it and the look on his face, like, to me, he's implying that Michelle cheated on Jesse. And that would explain that Kristen text to Michelle where she's like, I'll keep your secret safe. But I have to tell you, like, if you guys are gonna watch the episode, take a look at his face. There's something about it where it's very Kristen-esque, where Kristen has a secret or Kristen wants to drop a bomb. It is the exact same look. But it's also kind of evil. But then I remember for a minute, like, Luke hates Jesse, right? So, like, aside from Michelle, you know, like, he's probably thinking of how much he sort of wants to ruin Jesse's life, but, like, he won't tell what the secret is. But trust me, guys, like, watch this scene back. That is what he's trying to say. I am certain of it. So we're back at the Malibu house, and the ladies are playing Truth or Dare. And as part of one of the questions, Brittany is saying that she hasn't had sex in 1.5 months. And the women are shocked. They are just like, oh my God. And some of them are like, yeah, but they've been together 9 years. And some are like, yeah, but they have a kid. But some of them are just like, no, you need to put more work in. And they're just acting so appalled. And like, you know, I feel like we've seen this on Summer House with Lindsay. I feel like we're seeing this here. I just don't like this mentality of judging people for their sex lives because everyone's sex life is different. I mean, you know, you have these people who haven't done it in 6 weeks. You have Lindsay and Carl who are doing it twice a month. But when people act like it's this shocking thing, it makes you feel self-conscious about your relationship. And really, it's your relationship. I mean, think about it. There are many people who have sex or don't have sex before marriage. There are many people who don't have sex in their marriage at all. There are many people in just very various stages of situations. So when you act so shocked and appalled, it makes them feel bad about it. It's never a good thing. It just isn't. And everybody's marriage is different and everybody's sex lives are different. So Brittany says that Jax needs to make her feel attractive and he doesn't do that and she gets emotional. It's really sad. And then Daniel ends up texting Nia because he's having trouble with the babies and so she has to leave. The girls continue to have fun and there's no fighting. And then we have a scene of Nia talking to Danny the next day and she thinks that she's dealing with high functioning depression. He tells her that she's not alone and everything that she's going through is valid. Honestly, he's so amazing and supportive because, like I said, she's really was saying how she is this baby blues. What is this? What am I calling this? And then they determine that it's high functioning depression, right? And you can see how much she's struggling and how much she's sort of confused with her own mind, her own body, while still trying to raise these three kids. And this man, like, yeah, he made her leave. But again, this man was taking care of three children under two by himself with no air conditioning. I'm impressed. I'm sorry. I am. Then we have a scene of Jax and Brittany at home, and Brittany is saying that she didn't feel well after coming home after girls' night, and she said that maybe she didn't eat enough. Then they basically get in a fight about her throwing up, and, like, I don't know why he cares about that. Like, also remember when Brittany had stomach issues and kept throwing up? I think it was season 7, maybe season 6, and she went to the doctor about it. I don't remember what ended up coming of it, but maybe she just has a propensity to vomiting, like I do. For example, like, anything that can make you throw up makes me throw up. Jax tells the camera that Brittany is a mom and they need her and that she could be doing other things like smoke a joint. So I don't think that Brittany is an alcoholic who is going to die, so I don't really get how this affects her being a mom. It kind of doesn't affect her being a mom at all. And I also don't understand why he's fine with weed instead of drinking. Like, is it the throwing up? Because again, like, how does that affect him? She's not asking him to clean it up. I don't really know. So Jax asks her if she told the girls about their sex life, and she said yes. And she tells him that he needs to step it up, and, you know, he needs to step up his game, and he talks about being busy. And, you know, she said, like, you need to make me feel attractive. And he says, of course I'm attracted to you. And honestly, like, one of the things I was thinking about in their separation was, I mean, it's odd coming from Jax Taylor, who is basically a certified sex addict, is no longer interested in having sex. And, like, as you guys all know from my episode last week, or if you listened to Not Skinny, Not Fat, with Brittany Cartwright last week, or any of the other press she's been doing where she said they've only had sex, like, twice in the last year, you know, I mean, it is odd for Jax Taylor, and so I thought maybe this was an issue of him not being attracted to her, but he could also be lying to her, like, I really don't know. And then Brittany is very clear, and she says, like, these are the following things that I need from you. I need physical touch and words of affirmation. These are my love languages. And Jax is like, I do that stuff. And Brittany's like, I want you to make me feel beautiful. And he's like, I've just been, like, so stressed. And Brittany tells Jax that, you know, they're in it for the long haul, and they both agree that divorce is not an option, and they seem so sure of that. So I'm curious, like, when it came to the point where that changed. And it's sad to know that it did, right? Then we have another sad conversation with Jesse and Michelle talking at home. And Michelle tells him that she told Brittany that she's not happy and she doesn't know what to do. Jesse tells the camera that he's going to fight for his family, but he gets really emotional when talking to Michelle and says that he wants, like, to do things that they did before they had Isabella, but do them together as a family. And Michelle just says it's just so weird for her that this is all even happening, because, like, you just expect to get married and stay married and that's it, right? And sort of makes me think of what James Kennedy said about, like, you know, you're just supposed to meet someone and get married and have kids and do that, and that's what happens. And then in both situations, when things don't pan out the way you exactly expected, it can be a bit shocking, right? So that's it for The Valley, and that was a really great episode.
Your man made out with my friend!
Okay, so that's the end of I Take Bravo Very Seriously. Thank you guys for listening today, and you can listen to this episode and other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously and listen to episodes there as well. You can follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. You can follow me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator and at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. And if you enjoy this show, please leave me a 5-star review. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.